Hey guys, welcome to a new episode of Saw Something Scary. Jeff and Derek back here with you. Jeff, what's going on, buddy? How are you?
Man, I'm doing okay. I just got back from a vacation that I thoroughly enjoyed. I'm refreshed. I'm ready to do this podcast. I'm doing okay. The world might fall apart in the next couple of weeks, but I'm doing well. How are you?
Well, I mean, that's that's the beauty of 2020, right?
Yeah. It's just living on the edge of the cliff at all times.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm good, man. I'm a little older since the last time we talked.
Yes, you are.
But I'm good. Things are going well. If you can believe this, I open my Christmas show 2 weeks from today.
As the resident Scrooge here at Saw Something Scary, that is a great way to move me into full depression. I mean, I'm sure you'll kill at your show and there's going to be tons of people who want to watch you. I'm happy for you and your professional success. I just really hate Christmas.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I hate Christmas before Halloween.
And the fact big part of why I hate Christmas. Yeah.
Yeah. The fact that we open Christmas, our Christmas show on the 29th, which means that on Halloween, I'll be doing a Christmas show is ridiculous.
I mean, you're capturing Christmas creep perfectly there, and the kind of sentimentality that just, it absorbs everything good. It all gets caught up in this saccharine sentimentality mess that we can't escape for basically 2 months on either side of Christmas. I'm not in a good place when it comes to Christmas.
Yeah, I get it. It's crazy.
I just wanted to pick your brain. Does it feel like Halloween to you? Does it feel like October to you?
No, it felt like October, like 2 weeks ago when it got down to like the 60s and 70s. And I was like, oh, smokes, we're going to have autumn. Like, this is awesome. We're actually going to have a fall. And now it's still ridiculously hot for, you know, the middle of October. And I'm mad about everything.
Yeah, I'm basically right there with you. I've been in southern climes for a week, a little bit more. But even coming back to Tennessee, you know, this is the time of the year when the leaves change hard. Those temperatures fall. But man, it's like I'm sitting here in shorts and a t-shirt. It just feels like the end of September, maybe even the end of August.
Mm-hmm.
Which stinks because Halloween is basically Halloween and Reformation Day fall on the same day. And those are my last holidays that I enjoy till the spring.
Mm. You're not a Thanksgiving guy?
Not at all. No. It's basically because I hate that kind of food.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
If Thanksgiving was built around pizza, I'd be there.
Yeah.
I've just never met turkey I really liked.
Yeah. Well, I need to take you to a Swindell family Thanksgiving then.
Well, I'm always up for that. I'll tell you this. I am surrounded. This is where, you know, talking about privilege. I'm surrounded at all angles by people who are incredible cooks. You know, I've got all these Southern women who descended from my grandmother in terms of their cooking traditions. They can cook like crazy. The ladies at our church, when we do potlucks around this time of year, incredible food. I just don't care for the style. And so I'm like, this is really good, you know, name it. And that's wonderful. But there's a ceiling because I don't really care for that style, which is what everybody tuned into this podcast to hear. So thank you all for helping me work through my food therapy.
We're the Molly Shannon and what was that other girl on a gas tire on Saturday Night Live with the sweaty balls.
That's the nicest thing anyone's ever said about a podcast I've been on. So anyway, I guess the too long didn't read version is of all the things that 2020 has taken from us, it apparently is trying to take Halloween as well. And I'm raging against the dying of the light.
Yeah. I actually think I'm going to go into work today and be like, hey, let's do a costume contest for Halloween. See if anybody will jump on that with me.
I wonder if you could talk them into doing a special Halloween show. You know, just one time try it.
No, man, not in Branson. There's only two seasons in Branson. It's America and Christmas. And we're at the end of America right now. So.
Oh man, they hit my funny bone. I don't know. I don't know how to explain it, but that's hilarious.
I mean, it's the truth.
It is
the God's honest truth.
I'm just going to mute my mic while I laugh this off, and you can run us through the segments, okay?
So, As much as I would love to do a Halloween show, as much as I have begged and pleaded to make October our Halloween month and do a fun Halloween show, that's not a season we celebrate in Branson. So,
Oh yeah, that's unfortunate.
It is. I agree.
Why don't we do our part, Derek, to help bring some Halloween cheer to our listeners then?
Hey, sounds like a plan, my man. Let's do it. Today is the first part of a two-part episode. We are going to be reviewing Mike Flanagan's new Netflix original series, The Haunting of Bly Manor. So we're going to dive into episodes 1-4 today. And then next week, you'll get to see the thrilling conclusion with episodes 5-9. But before we get into our main event, I think our good friend, the Horror Reporter, has a couple things he'd like to share with us.
Yeah, for sure. This week's The first is just self-indulgent. I don't know if you'll care about this as much or if there's anything even really to comment on. But as a guy who has just recently been bemoaning the death of Halloween in 2020, Bloody Disgusting posted a article about a new book on the Halloween film franchise.
Okay.
That sounds super interesting. It's called Taking Shape 2, and it's spotlighting the Halloween sequels that never got made, which, Derek, I don't know off the top of your head if you want to guess, how many Halloween sequels do you think went into development in some sense and never got made? Would you pick a number?
5.
Let's go higher.
Oh, 14.
Let's go higher.
37.
Okay, we finally eclipsed it. It's 24.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, 24 unmade Halloween films. So Taking Shape 2 looks at all these unmade sequels and some of the ones that got made, I guess. It's a follow-up to a book called Taking Shape that is about like the development of the Halloween franchise.
Okay.
I didn't know about either one of them until I saw this report on Bloody Disgusting, but I think now I want to get both of them.
Yeah.
Let me give you an excerpt from John Squire's piece on Bloody Disgusting. Every fan of the Halloween franchise absolutely needs to own Dustin McNeil and Travis Mullen's incredible book, Taking Shape, which was released last year and covers the entire franchise, quote, from script to screen. The 400-plus page book digs deep into the behind-the-scenes stories of every single Halloween movie, from the original classic through Halloween 2018. And guess what? The sequel, Taking Shape 2, The Lost Halloween Sequels, is available now. The authors are back to bring you an inside look at 24 lost Halloween sequels you never saw on the big screen. Learn about these fascinating unmade visions direct from their creators, many of whom have never spoken publicly on the subject before. This tome comes in at 600 pages. It's brimming with untold franchise history, and that starts with a great foreword by Anthony Masai. So here's kind of the bullet point list of stuff that's in the book. An alternate Halloween 3, which was set decades after the first one. Three unused versions of Halloween 4, one of which had Laurie Strode in it. An early Halloween 5 draft that featured an evil Jamie Lloyd. The Halloween 6, this one's kind of famous, that Quentin Tarantino almost produced. An early version of 7 before it became H2O. Three different sequels to Halloween Resurrection. Insight into how a crossover with Hellraiser almost came to be. Two different stabs, no pun intended, at a 3D sequel in the Rob Zombie era, which, by the way,
Lord.
Thank you to every power in the horror universe that stopped that from happening. A reboot with 2 shapes and another with 100.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't know how you get there. A reboot that introduced the Halloween multiverse. So,
well, now that's the one we need.
That's for sure the one we need. As long as none of the multiverses are the Rob Zombie universe.
Yeah, yeah. With all the success that Spider-Man Into the Multiverse had, let's just do one for every big name character ever.
Now I picture Miles Morales crawling around on the ceiling in a Captain Kirk mask, just dropping it on people to kill him like an ambush spider.
I was just wanting to see Anthony Hopkins and Mads Mikkelsen talk about, and Brian Cox talk about Hannibal Lecter together.
Let's go. I'm in for that too. I want all three of them to walk into the room of the same victim and be like, well, boys, who goes first? Who do you toss the keys to?
I take the head, you take the chest, you take the legs.
One of them's just going to want the organs, right? A little snack for the road.
Okay. So I am looking at this this Amazon page for this. You can buy this book right now for $28.
Yeah, I may just do that. It may be the remedy to my Halloween blues.
Yeah.
So anyway, as a Halloween fan, I know some of our listeners are big fans as well. Thought I'd throw that out there.
Yeah, cool, man. I may have to take that too.
I'll tell you what, if one of us gets it before the other, read it and then loan it to the other. How about that?
Yeah, there you go.
Second item that I think falls under the heading of good news. Do you remember about 100 years ago, we discussed how there might be a potential I Know What You Did Last Summer series developed?
Yeah.
So we've got confirmation from the Hollywood Reporter that Amazon has greenlit it and it's going into production.
Okay.
Sarah Goodman, who has worked on Gossip Girl, which I haven't seen, but also Preacher, which I saw the first season of, looks to be the kind of head person on this. She's writing and executive producing it. But James Wan is also involved. His Atomic Monster is going to have a hand in bringing this thing into existence. And I'm pretty excited about that.
Dang, okay.
One of the Amazon execs were saying, we're going to put a modern spin on the material, which, okay, you know, whatever. But teenagers running around a beach town trying to both hide from and expose a killer. I don't know that that needs a whole lot of gussing up other than modern settings. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, I'm pretty excited for that. Does that land on your radar as like woohoo, or is that a wait and see kind of thing?
I'll tell you, I think for me, it's probably going to be a wait and see type deal. But I will say that I'll definitely check it out. You know, that sounds like something that's in our wheelhouse. So I'll definitely check it out. But I don't know how much enthusiasm I'll have for it until I see it. Does that make sense?
It does. I kind of wonder if there's any meat on the bone with the novel. When we reviewed the original movie, which is available in our archives, I found out that there was a novel from the 70s that the movie was based on, which I didn't know at that time.
Okay.
And I just wonder if they're going to go back and find elements there. If any of our listeners have read that novelization, I'd love for you to chime in on the Facebook group or hit us up on Twitter or whatever and tell us, you know, give us some insight into what may be in the book that would be useful to people trying to tell the story again.
Yeah.
I'm cautiously optimistic. I'm enthusiastic about the timelessness of the premise. I generally respect and appreciate James Wan. I'm in the same vein you are. I'm definitely going to check it out, but I'm also kind of optimistic.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll be curious to see how that all plays out.
I will say, I hope this doesn't step on too many toes out there, but I will say I do hope it goes better than the Scream television adaptation. I had high hopes for that, and I think a lot was squandered there.
Yeah, you know, I watched the first season. I want to say I watched the second season as well. I never did watch the third season of that. I think it's all on Netflix now, so I should probably finish that up.
I think that's right. I didn't go back after season one. I just didn't care. I didn't care about anything going on enough to resume.
Yeah, well, that is the thing, is that you would think that with the benefit of TV, you would be able to invest in those characters more and make people care about them more. And when season one was over, I was like, I don't give a flub about any of these people.
Absolutely. Absolutely right. I was just left kind of thinking back to the last film going, can we just get those people back? I know I've said that a million times on this podcast, but speaking of meat left on the bone, I thought some of the new blood brought into Scream had some merit and had some potential, and we just never got to see it.
Yeah. Yeah, it was frustrating.
Well, brother, here's the gem of this edition of The Horror Reporter. I'm absolutely over the moon about this. I'm giddy. I'm schoolgirlish. I'm fanboying. I don't think you'll be quite as enthusiastic. We have confirmation from Entertainment Tonight that Showtime is reviving Dexter with Michael C. Hall.
Yeah. I mentioned this on my Facebook yesterday. I'll tell you what I am excited about. I'm excited about the fact that the showrunner for the first four seasons of Dexter is coming back to do this Dexter.
Yes. Yes. It's so good.
So I'm on board, man. I love Dexter. I just the ending of it was garbage.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I, you know, we've talked about this before on several different episodes, but I always tell people, matter of fact, I told this to somebody yesterday, hey, watch, if you haven't seen Dexter, watch the first four seasons and then just act like the season four finale is the end of the series, and it'll save yourself a lot of heartache and indigestion.
Well, I mean, I hung with it further. I'm with you. The ending was not good. Double ungood. But I think the franchise had a little bit more to offer than just those first four. But those first four are some of the best things that have ever been on TV, at least that I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, to get the original showrunner back and the release makes it sound like Michael C. Hall is going to have a creative hand in it as well.
Yeah.
Man, just give me all that. It's 10 episodes. So there's a start and an end point, right? Like they're not going to get trapped trying to keep the story going. I just could not be happier.
Hopefully not.
Don't you speak that evil over me, Ricky Bobby.
hey, right the wrong that you made with the finale and give us something really good to sink our teeth into, that takes that god awful taste out of our mouths about the finale or even about that last season, and I'm good.
That's really the big question, and you're the horror prognosticator. Do they pick up with Dexter in the mining camp, or do they do some kind of soft reboot?
Retcon. I mean, if they're smart, Dexter's great because of Michael C. Hall, but Dexter is great because of the cast of characters that he was surrounded himself by.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you pick up on like a quote unquote lost episode, because I don't see Dexter without Jennifer Carpenter.
Yeah, that's a great point.
I don't see Dexter without Masuka. I don't see Dexter without, what was his name with the hat? I forget now, but you know who I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, I don't see them. I don't see Dexter without those guys. He needs that cast of characters. And the way that you ended it, Deb's, spoiler alert, everybody.
It's been 7 a minute.
Years ago. Yeah. But Deb's dead and Dexter is presumed dead, but he is off. In some lumberjack place in Alaska, I think is where they left him off at. Batista, Angel Batista, that's who I was thinking of. You got to have those people. You don't have to have LaGuardia, but to me, you have to have Deb, you have to have Batista, you have to have Masuka, and of course, you have to have Harry.
The ghost of Harry. So I think we have talked about this a bit. I've enjoyed the novels and the TV show. And they diverged. There was a lot of continuity initially, but then it kind of diverged. The novels took Dexter in a more kind of humorous direction. It never became comedy, but Dexter cracked more one-liners as the books went on. I think in the show, what happened is Dexter became more humanized because he became a husband and then a dad and so on and so forth. They tried to strip some of that away in the final season. And I think if I had my druthers, I would have a more sociopathic, disconnected, less human Dexter coming out of that mining camp scenario. Like, I would probably just say that, I mean, I would do like, it's been the exact same number of years since we last saw Dexter for him, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I would leave what he did in the camp and after that just super vague. And let him realize he wants to be back in a sunny environment. And so he goes to San Diego rather than Miami, something like that. But he's not the humanized Dexter we saw before everything went sideways. I think that's what I would do. I'd make him more Hannibal Lecter.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm giddy. I'm giddy for whatever they do with him. I mean, if they don't, as long as they don't turn him into some slapstick comedy creature, if we get the lost season, whatever, just give me those 10 episodes. It goes into production in 2021. So I got a little while to wait, but let's go.
Yeah. Apparently, Gary Levine, who is the Showtime's co-president of entertainment, talked about that they have found a brilliant creative angle for the ninth season. So I got to be honest with you, that doesn't
fire you up.
Well, it just, I don't know, man. I will be excited to see Michael C. Hall back as Dexter. And if it's Clyde Phillips, the original showrunner, and it's Michael C. Hall, and they're the ones in charge, then I'll give it a go regardless. I doubt anything could be as worse as that finale was. So
I don't have any argument to offer. I'm just going to live in naive hope that is entirely contrary to everything I've experienced for at least a calendar year.
Yeah.
And the ending of the franchise also.
Yeah. Well, hey man, you know what? If it winds up being good, then surprise mother effer. You got me.
Oh, I can't wait. I cannot wait. But I'll quit gushing. Just really excited about that and looking forward to seeing where they go with it. And I'm just going to believe in faith that it's going to be good. Don't let me down, Michael C. Hall.
Don't let me down. I actually have one small piece of Horror Reporter news that I think will tickle your fancy.
Yes, so bring it right on.
Do you remember the Friday the 13th fan film Never Hike Alone?
Absolutely.
All right. Well, they have just released this week a prequel called Never Hike in the Snow.
Oh, dude.
And it is on YouTube right now. And here is the synopsis on it, okay?
Uh-huh.
Set 3 months prior to Never Hike Alone, Never Hike in the Snow follows the strange disappearance of Mark Hill, a Crystal Lake resident who went for a hike in the dead of winter and never came home. As local Wessex County Sheriff Rick Colone and Deputy Alan Mabry search for answers, town local Tommy Jarvis believes that his old nemesis Jason Voorhees is to blame. Will Diana Hill ever see her son again, or will her son become another lost victim of the cursed camp? And I think this dropped on Tuesday, but it is out right now. It is on YouTube, and y'all can watch it.
Man, insert the sound of Miz saying awesome right here.
Yeah.
Can we do a review of that the next time we record for Saw Something Scary?
Matter of fact, why don't we do a review of that and Never Hike Alone?
Cool by me.
So
we want to do the fan films, then the wrap up of Bly Manor, and those will be the two segments.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I see what you're saying now. I thought you wanted to just devote a whole episode to Never Hike in the Snow.
I'm happy to flip that into its own episode as well.
Yeah. Well, why don't we do that then? Why don't we finish up Bly Manor next week, and then just in time for Halloween, we'll do Never Hike Alone and Never Hike in the Snow.
Perfect. Right. Absolutely perfect.
There you go. That's how we get stuff done here on the show.
Uh-huh. Enjoy that peek behind the curtain.
Yep. So I haven't had a chance to watch this yet. As a matter of fact, shout out to my buddy Brent Terhune for even putting this on my radar. But I'm very excited to take a gander at it when I get the chance. It clocks in at 31 minutes, so not a long film, not a huge investment of time. And if it's half as good as the first one, man, I'm real excited about it. Apparently, the people who make these movies, there's a production company called Womp Stomp Films.
Mm-hmm.
They have already announced Never Hike Alone 2, Never Hike Again, Never Hike Alone 3, Jason Takes Crystal Lake, and Never Hike Alone 4, The Final Hike.
Dude, we got to get Jason out of legal purgatory and just give the franchise to these guys.
Yeah. Yeah. Or just let the legal battles keep going and these guys can just keep going.
Maybe keep
putting this together.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. We probably ought to be downloading those off the internet for when the legal issues are resolved and all the copyright strikes get filed.
Yeah, seriously.
That is good news, sir. Look at this. This episode is just perking me right up out of my Halloween malaise. Thank you, sir.
There you go. Yeah. Never Hike Alone was 54 minutes long, and Never Hike in the Snow is 31 minutes long. So, yeah, that'll be enough content for us to I think, divulge a full review on.
For sure.
Sweet.
Well, that's all I've got for
this week's Horror
Report. All right. Good deal. So now, my friend, let's pour a string on the haunting of Bly Manor.
Yes, sir. Do we need to call Mark in?
Oh, we definitely need to call Mark in. Wahlberg!
What? No!
Spoiler alert. I'm always glad when we can give that guy some work.
I know, poor guy. Especially right now.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. Speaking of tough, man.
Get into it.
I'm finding it tough to get into the haunting of Bly Manor.
Mm.
I went looking for the horror uncle, and I think he drowned in a lake. Now, I am just at episode 4. Just finished it last night. You've seen the whole thing, right?
I have. Yes, sir.
Okay. Would you say there's reason for optimism from here on out?
Man, in my opinion, there is. You know, you and I were kind of talking before we hit record. In my opinion, this thing picks up at episode 5. And if I had been smart, I would have said, hey, Jeff, let's review the first 5 episodes and then leave the last 4. But I wasn't. I was trying to make it easy to digest for the listeners and for you and to just do the first 4. But, you know, I think that we had the same thing 2 years ago with Hill House, where the first 4 episodes were kind of world building, uh-huh. Setting up the characters, you know, kind of letting you see some backstory on them. Every once in a while, you'd have something pop up that, you know, that would pop up that would scare you a little bit and stuff. But then episode 5, if I'm not mistaken, in that series is where we find out that Nell has been dead the whole time.
That sounds right. Yeah.
All right. Well, I think we knew that she had been dead, but we figured out the origins of the bent neck lady.
Sure.
That's what was going on.
Sure.
Yeah. And so that was episode 5. And as a matter of fact, if you want to know, that is a 9.5 on IMDb.
Okay. Well, that's great. And remind me, I've got a story to tell you and our listeners about some friends who just watched The Haunting of Hill House. Mm. But that's where I have been. I've spent the first 4 episodes thinking, like, I just wish I was watching The Haunting of Hill House.
Yeah.
And that has been not what I was hoping for.
Yeah. I think for me, I don't think this is, well, I don't want to say it's not as good as Hill House. It's not as scary as Hill House. I did find myself being very tense in the last, you know, episodes 5 through 9. I remember, like, really kind of, you know, instead of reclining back in my chair, kind of being raised up a little bit more and trying to figure out what's going on. For me, you know, the fun thing about these is trying to find, like, the hidden ghosts in the episodes.
Yeah, that's fun.
And trying to, you know, trying to decipher on what's going on. This one was pretty easy to figure out, but I don't know, man. For some reason, I really enjoyed the story, and I really enjoyed the way that it all was brought together. So I'm just telling you, and for those of you who may be watching it bit by bit, just know that, like, don't give up on this series yet. Episode 5 is its highest rated on IMDb. It's a 9.0, and I think it is kind of it's the best episode of the series, and it's definitely, I don't think it'll get you, it'll shock you as much as the bent neck lady, but there are certain elements in it where I was like, yep, this is what Flanagan does. This is what we can expect from these horror anthologies, is he's going to build the world, and then in that 5th episode, he's going to drop the hammer, and then he's going to tie up the loose ends from 6 to, you know, 9 or 10 or however many episodes that they have.
Okay. Well, so then let me do this. Let me propose this. How about I throw to you the things that I have found good and the things I have found bad, and you tell me if you agree or disagree and whether or not kind of there's an upward trend on the theme ahead of us to look forward to.
I'd love that.
Okay. So I'm going to start with the good, because I led off with sort of a general negative conclusion. I would say that Victoria Pedretti is doing a really good job of not being Nell, which I didn't think would be possible, really. I really was invested in Nell, and I thought, I'll only see Victoria as Nell. But she has done a bunch with her mannerisms to make me see her as a completely different character. So 2 things. She's kind of goofy. Like, her laugh is goofy. Mm-hmm. And when she runs, which she spends a lot of time in these episodes doing, she takes steps like her underwear is around her ankles. And it just worked for me. Like, I just see her as this, not just American. In my mind, she's a Southern girl who's a little out of sorts in British culture. And I'm tipping my cap to Miss Pedretti for taking a character, or taking her face attached to a character I've loved in the same series, and helping me see her as a completely different character.
Yeah.
Agree, yeah. Disagree? What do you think?
I agree with that. I do want to ask you this, though. When was the last time you watched Hill House?
Man, it's probably been 6 months ago.
Okay.
And I think I just went and, like, dropped back in on the funeral home episode and the next with the bent neck lady while I was doing some work.
Okay. The reason I asked that is this, is I don't think that I've watched Hill House again since the original viewing of it.
Okay.
And so for me, it was easy to, like, I knew, you know, like, oh, there's Carla Gugino. Oh, hey, there's Elliot from E.T. Oh, hey, there's the douchebag from Invisible Man. Oh, hey, there's Victoria Pedretti. Like, but I guess I was so far gone from who they were in Hill House that I wasn't trying to make those connections.
Yeah.
Like, I knew they were the same actor and actresses, but I was also excited to take this trip with these new people and see what was going to happen. So I guess I'm just wondering if, like, maybe that's where some of your disconnect is coming from, is like, oh, hey, these are the same actors from a series that I adore. I would much rather watch that series than try to figure out what this world building is and you know, going through all this slow stuff.
Yeah, that's entirely possible. And I think when we get to the bad here in a minute, I'll have some more to throw at you on that front that may indicate mm-hmm. that you've nailed it for me.
Yeah.
I just to make it nice and tidy, I'm happy for Pedretti to kind of stretch her legs as an actress.
Mm-hmm.
Do you watch the TV version of Fargo?
Man, I watched the first season and then I have not been able to watch the other seasons, but I want to really, I desperately want to catch up on it. I know season 4 is going on right now, correct?
Yeah, I couldn't recommend it more. I think it's season 3 that has the Russian character who's the wolf in it. It's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
So I really love Fargo. Fargo has done some of this where they'll like bring the same actor back and they're in a new role. Pedretti just pulled it off very well, and I want to commend her for that. The second positive I have, and this will wrap up my positive comments. and I'm going to butcher the name. Speaking of Southerners, I'm going to butcher the name, but Raul Colils Owen.
Uh-huh.
He is meant to be likable, and I find him so likable that I keep waiting for them to reveal that he's cooking village children in his meat pies.
Can I give you a spoiler?
Well, let me start here.
Okay.
I wrote in my notes that I will be deeply hurt when he's eventually killed by the ghost of Quint. So that is my one prediction for the rest of this series.
Okay. I don't want to spoil anything for you then.
Okay. Okay. Well, I am liking his character so much that I think Mr. Colil is going to be one of my favorite actors. So
yeah, he's fantastic.
I'm in.
Yeah.
The last thing that I've really saw with him is the bonfire scene where they're kind of burying uh-huh. their personal ghosts. And truth be told, I found most of the people kind of doing their goodbye to this person in a way that's not common for Flanagan's work, just to be sort of thin and unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
But when he was talking about his mom, I was over there like clutching my pearls and grabbing for the Kleenexes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the most obvious setup, right? Like this is to be catharsis for him. And I'm usually more cynical about that stuff. But dude, I thought he did the devoted son who really loves his mother, yet watched her go through a very difficult thing. Shades of what we watched in Relic, available in our archives. I thought he did it really well, man. And I was like, I want to give you a hug, man.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, I think for me, he's been I don't want to say the bright spot, but he has been definitely one of the bright spots in the series.
yes. In fact, I think he's been one of two bright spots.
Right. Yeah. I got to disagree with you on that. I think that the acting in this is really good. And, I love, Tania Miller, who is playing Hannah Gross. I think she's doing a great job.
Oh, I have much to say on that front.
Okay.
Let me tee you up in a minute. Okay.
Okay.
So now let's move into the bad.
Yeah.
And this is the worst indictment I have ever leveled at a Mike Flanagan production.
Oh, my goodness.
It's just not scary. So thinking about those first 4 episodes, for me, there's one element that even got sort of my horror spidey sense tingling.
Mm-hmm.
Was there anything for you in the first 4 that you found vaguely frightening?
I'm trying. Here's the... Okay, I'm going to be as honest with you as possible. I barely remember the first 4.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair.
I'm telling you, man, when you get to 5, 5's where it picks up.
Well, let me throw you the one element and maybe it'll jog your memory. And I don't know what your reaction will be. But there's a scene where they're playing hide and go seek and mm-hmm. Flora runs up into the attic
mm-hmm.
and she's kind of humming something and you hear another voice humming. And eventually she turns around and tells the other thing humming to shush.
Yeah.
And it's like one of the eyeless, mouthless things that the paintings turn into in the intro.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the first time and the only time in this entire 4 episodes where I thought, oh, now that's interesting.
Yeah.
And I just didn't expect that from Flanagan.
Okay. I think that if I had watched just the first 4 episodes, I would be in lockstep with you on a lot of the stuff that you're saying.
Yeah.
But since I've come through on the other side, I will say this, and this is something else that we were talking about before we hit record, is I don't think that this is a very scary like a very scary series. There are certain elements, like there are a couple jump scares that got me in this thing.
Uh-huh.
But I can't, man, this sucks. I want to talk to you about it so much more, but I don't want to ruin anything for you.
Yeah, and that's fair. I appreciate that. I'm just thinking strictly in the first four. You know, right. The horror elements have been there's muddy footprints in the hall, and Ghost Jessel walks the house at night. And I'm like, meh, whatever. I will tell you one of the biggest letdowns here, and I know this is so very particular to me, but it's also one of the reasons I can't find this stupid thing scary, is because Ghost Fiance looks like freaking Puka.
I hadn't even thought about that. I didn't even make that connection, but yeah.
As soon as he came on the screen, I was like, no, I don't want Puka.
I've been playing a Batman game on my iPad, so he reminded me of a demonic Edward Nygma.
Oh, that'd be so much better.
Yeah.
Yeah, at the end of episode 3, I think, Fiance Puka appears behind Nell standing out in the courtyard of the house,
mm-hmm.
and he gets snatched back into the house really hard.
Yeah.
That's exactly my reaction when I first saw Fiance Puka. Like, it just sucked me right out of the world, and I was immediately angry. This is the tendrils of Puka. It even ruins other good things.
Yeah, you're not lying there. We'll try to look at him, Matt. Well, dang it, Jeff. There's so much I want to say, and I can't because I just don't want to.
Yeah, well, maybe they'll be able to redeem him. I thought his death in the flashback was really well done.
Yeah.
I thought it was gruesome and set up well. So
yeah, that was one of the times where, even though I saw it coming,
mm-hmm.
just the way it happened, I was like, oh, snap.
Yeah. So my conclusion on the point that it just hasn't been scary is that I've concluded, at least for the first four episodes, this is much more a drama than it is anything connected to horror or even thriller. And that is not what I was hoping for.
Yeah.
So here's where we can argue. My second criticism is that the characters outside of Danny are super thin and stereotypical.
Ah.
And again, I love Flanagan's characterizations. That's one of the things I love about him most. But at least for these first four episodes, these guys are paper thin. So let me run through it and you tell me how I'm stupid and wrong. Okay.
I'm not going to say that you're stupid and wrong. I think that if I had watched through the first four episodes, I don't think I would say that you're wrong on that. But just knowing the outcome, knowing the end game, I will disagree with you just because I know how everything ends up.
Sure. Well, you specifically mentioned Tania Miller.
Mm-hmm.
She's lovely. And I would watch her in 1,000 different things. But for these first four episodes, she is the Patricia personality from Kevin Wendell Crumb.
Mm.
And when I see her, I'm like, oh, that's Kevin Wendell Crumb playing Patricia. I mean, they're both bald even.
Mm.
The other question I have for her is, why can't she and Owen just be together? Like, why do we have all the angstiness?
Oh, Jeff.
Here's another one. So actually, before I move on, I want to note Tania Miller is awesome. We've talked about this a bit before. It's hard for me to quantify what it is, charisma for an actress, right? Like, but there are certain people that if they're on screen and they're not doing anything, like for her, she spends a lot of time lighting candles and looking at walls.
Mm-hmm.
But I just she just rivets my attention. I think she's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And for the first four, I'm like, I wish she wasn't Patricia. So that's my Tania Miller comment. Amelia Eves Jamie is the flattest character I've ever seen in a Flanagan universe.
Mm.
She is supposed to be the edgy groundskeeper who becomes an unexpected love interest, but she's not edgy enough. Her quips are just sort of flippant. There's no hard edge to them.
Mm-hmm.
She's not personally interesting enough, and they friggin' telegraph the love interest thing the first time Danny and her are on screen together.
Yeah.
I just thought, dude, what are you doing? This is clumsy storytelling. Like, pre-Oculus Mike Flanagan. I can't remember the name of the film off the top of my head, but the one where the sister disappears in the tunnel.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That Mike Flanagan was better at characters than what we've seen out of Jamie.
Mm.
It raises this secondary criticism as well. And maybe you'll just tell me this all gets resolved. But why is Blyhouse?
Absentia.
Yes, thank you. So why is Blyhouse basically Temptation Island, where everyone has to hook up with everyone else there? Can any coworkers just work together? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I get it. It's an isolated English countryside, but are the nights that cold for real? I was thinking through this with what appears very clearly to be the boy being possessed by the spirit of Peter Quint. Mm-hmm. At this point, in these first four episodes, Flora is the one character in the entire cast so far who's not in love with another member of the cast living at Bly House. I'm not digging it.
So you think.
Okay. Third one, and this is to the Victoria Pedretti point you raised earlier about maybe I'm just too attached to The Haunting of Hill House. Mm-hmm. So I feel like Pedretti has differentiated herself. But with Oliver Jackson Cohen's Peter, mm-hmm. I just can't even with that guy. One, okay, it's a D-bag white dude in nice threads who manipulates everybody. Like, again, just stereotypical, thin.
Yeah.
But you know better as an actual actor. And I hate his accent. And is it because the accent is bad, or is it because I'm expecting him to be the brother from The Haunting of Hill House?
Man, I don't know. I think it's because the accent is bad.
Okay. It's driving me crazy.
I could definitely see where you're like, well, that's not how he talks. I think Oliver Jackson Cohen, I think, is actually English.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. He was born in London, England.
Okay.
But, you know, he has like this brogue, mm-hmm. kind of Scottish brogue going. And it's, yeah, to me, it's the goal. To me, and I don't want to say this, Jeff, every criticism that you have brought up so far is very valid. But again, I feel like that, I hope that you feel the same way that I do, that Flanagan redeems himself in these last five episodes.
Yeah, me too, buddy. Me too. Because it's looking bleak in the Wright household, watching the Bly household fall apart.
But I will tell you that it's not very scary.
Yeah, that's
a I was more tense. And man, there's one thing that I want to say to you, and it's going to be the first thing I say in next week's episode. And I think that if I said this to you right now, you would go, oh, okay, well, that explains a lot. But I don't want to ruin anything for you.
Okay.
So I'm just trying to sit on some stuff.
Okay. Well,
I'm trying to be like the Fonz and just sit on it.
I appreciate that. And I'm looking forward to it. I will be delighted when I get some tension, because right now I've kind of been like, this is paint by numbers. The only thing I've been surprised by is how simplistic Flanagan's been willing to be with some of these points. So like, anything he does from here is going to be house money, and I'm going to be delighted. But the other two kind of character criticisms I have is that I hate that in these first four, maybe this changes, but I hate that Carla Gugino is just sidelined as a voiceover actress.
Yeah.
I just miss her. And every time I hear her voice, I think, gosh, I just wish she was in this more.
Yeah.
And then the last thing is that the most interesting character to me so far has been Miss Jessel.
Okay.
And so every time she's on the screen, I'm really captivated. Like, mm-hmm. there's a scene where Miss Gross says she was brilliant and she was beautiful, and I don't know why they persecute the brilliant, beautiful ones or something like that. The casting here has been perfect, and the actress has pulled it off perfectly where I believe her to be those things. And like, I already feel the, like, it is a tragedy what has happened to her. Mm-hmm. But because I think all the other characters are kind of bland and uninteresting, I'm like, can we just spend more time with Miss Jessel? I'd rather watch her interact with the kids than some of the, like, Jamie sitting at the table being soft, edgy scenes mm-hmm. we've gotten. So those are all my criticisms of the characters so far.
Okay. Like I said, man, I think that those are very justified.
Yeah.
Especially being where you're at right now.
I'm definitely bringing a lot of baggage into this that maybe isn't in Flanagan's fault. Like the Puka thing, I hope he's never seen that mess, and he doesn't understand why that visual is troublesome.
Yeah.
But the other bit of baggage I'm bringing in that just kills my soul is that having watched that awful movie, The Turning, mm-hmm. has messed up so much of this series for me, because it makes me remember the beats of The Turning of the Screw. Mm-hmm. So like when with Quint, right? Quint's going to show back up and terrorize everybody. When it happens, I'm not the least bit surprised. I've been sitting around waiting for it because I remember the friggin' Turning. Mm-hmm. And that's baggage that this series can't carry, but it's still dragging down my enjoyment. So friggin' Puka and The Turning, two of the worst things I've seen since we've been doing this podcast, mm-hmm. are like some kind of terrible octopus from the depth dragging down Haunting of Bly Manor. I guess to just bring it full circle, but I will end on a happier note, to come full circle, I've spent these first four episodes just kind of wishing I was watching Haunting of Hill House.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that is the crux of your problems with this thing. Because I like I said, I was able to detach myself from Hill House. You know, I knew it was Flanagan. I knew we were going into another haunted house. I knew that a lot of the same people were going to show up, but I was ready for a new story.
Well, I mean, I feel like I was too. Hill House may have just set my expectations too high. It could be that like Flanagan kind of came close to achieving perfection there, and you can't always hit that note again or exceed that note again. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. This series isn't Hill House, and it's a lot different than Hill House, but I think I really do think it's good. And I really was enthralled and entertained by it. But it did take, I think episode 5 was where I stopped going to the phone and just started watching the series.
Yeah, I'm ready for that. I am ready for that. And, you know, Flanagan has so much credit with me. I'll watch anything he puts out through to the end, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's a really good series. It is slow starting out, but once it gets ramped up, I think it's really good to go. Now, I do think that the things that you're talking about do hamper it. Like, I was talking to a friend of mine about the show, and she mentioned The Turning. And I said, whatever you do, never watch The Turning.
Yeah, for sure.
I said, as a matter of fact, definitely don't watch this series and then go watch The Turning, because your expectations will be, I mean, it'll just be the biggest disappointment.
Yeah.
Even more so than it would be just going into it cold.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I wish I had never touched The Turning. I wish I'd never read a Wikipedia article on The Turning. The terribleness of that movie, and then that it reaches out. And I mean, like, The Haunting of Bly Manor is objectively better, even with my criticisms, than The Turning ever hoped to be.
Oh, of course.
But the fact that The Turning is reaching out and kind of making the Haunting of Bly Manor worse for me is just, it's just loathsome. That film is such a waste.
Yeah, I should just show you the negative effects that series had on everybody.
Yeah.
Yep. Or that movie, rather, not that series. Yeah, so I think that there are some factors that are hindering you from your enjoyment. But at the same time, like I said, the first 4 episodes are slow. It is Flanagan trying to world build. And also, like, Hill House had more exciting things going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, with Bly Manor, we get introduced to these two kids. Obviously, the boy has some behavioral issues, which we later find out, you know, aren't really his fault. Sorry for the spoiler. You know, the little girl is trying to be sweet and precocious and cute, but clearly she's got something going on too.
Well, and she's trying to manage it too. Like, she's sweet in that way. Like, she's trying to keep people from like running into the crazy.
Yeah. So there's just not as much, like, I guess there's just not as much like WTF moments that are going to happen with a au pair and her two kids, as opposed to a family battling addiction and depression and suicide and all this other stuff. Does that make sense?
Sure. Sure.
So it's a different story, and there's not as much meat on the bone for horror lovers.
Yeah.
But I do think that I think that Flanagan does a great job with this. I don't think endings are his strong suit.
Mm.
I think it's world building and characters, and I get where you're coming from with like paper thin, but I'm just telling you, man, just keep going with it. And if you feel that same way next week, then I'll definitely apologize. But I left this series with a huge smile on my face and was happy that I had invested the 9 hours of my life into it that I did over the span of like 3 or 4 days. I will say this, and I'm going to say this to I'll wait till next week. I'll say it next week.
Well, I'm happy to hear your testimony and believe that'll be my experience as well. I'm looking forward to jumping back into it tonight. So I'm not. You know, I haven't come to a final conclusion. I just have been very let down so far.
Sure.
But to kind of go out on a happy note, I think our listeners will enjoy this as well. I have a friend who I work where I teach, and he also is a member of our church. And he is a huge fan of stories, knows the kind of nuts and bolts of good stories better than probably anybody I know. But he doesn't like horror movies, and he's very scared by them.
Mm.
Well, his wife, she likes horror movies, but she has a very Like, it's kind of like me with eating hot food. Like, I think I like hot food until I'm with somebody who really likes hot food and I realize I'm a weenie. And so they have kind of been like, I've been working on them saying, you should watch this, you should watch that, and warming them up. So we were at a conference not too long ago and we watched the first chapter of It together with another friend who doesn't like horror movies. And they're like, okay, yeah, I get it. I see what you're talking about. You know, what else should I watch next? So I sent this couple to watch The Exorcism of Emily Rose. And they're like, that was really good. I get what you're saying about a good story. It wasn't quite as scary as I thought it would be. So like, feed me more. While I'm at the beach, I get a text from the wife and she says, hey, what do you think about The Haunting of Hill House? And I just got a big grin on my face and I wrote back and I said, I love that thing. I think it's one of the best pieces of the genre that's ever been produced, particularly in, you know, the 2000s. And I don't have enough good things to say about it. Plus, it's really scary. And she wrote back and said, yeah, we're watching it. We were hoping you would say it sucks because we're getting scared really badly. So, you know, that was early in the week. I came back to our Wednesday night stuff here at church last night and he came in the restroom. And while I was washing my hands, I said, did you finish Hill House? And he said, yep. I said, how did you like Neil interrupting that argument? And he was over by like the stalls and he came out and he just made eye contact with me and his eyes were as big as Puka Face dead fiance. He said, dude, when that happened, we paused the show and just screamed for a full minute. and then we gushed about the series, which actually the end of our conversation ended exactly where you were just a minute ago. He said, that is such an incredible series, but the ending's not great. And that's true. That's true. The Haunting of Hill House is like a 95, you know, and that ending keeps it from a full 100. But I just love that picture of these guys who, you know, they're kind of dipping their toes into horror. One of the best jump scares I've ever seen comes out and they just pause it so they can scream. I love that. Like, it got me excited again about being a horror fan.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what, I mean, that's what it's all about.
So I'm out on a happy note there. Still making me think of Hill House, but good. I'm willing to believe that there's magic left in the next 5 episodes and I'm looking forward to watching them.
Yeah. Good. Good. I don't think we ought to rate this just yet. I don't think we ought to, do the we saw something scary.
I think people can probably tell when I think I haven't seen anything scary. And right now, this is like a 3. So I don't want to rate it either. I'd like to kind of get the full set in.
Yeah. Just know to be continued. We'll wrap everything up next week. And I'm really excited to talk to you. As a matter of fact, I'll probably, while through the week when I have time, I'm probably going to go back and watch 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 just so I've got it fresh in my head so that we can sit down and talk more about it. Because I really do feel like it's just some really good stuff, man. 5 is great. 6 and 7 are okay. I felt like 8 was really good. And then the finale is sort of the typical Flanagan stuff with the finale. But also, everything gets wrapped up. And the first thing that I'm going to tell you next week, I think that once I say that to you, you probably will already have drawn your own conclusion to it anyway. But once I say that to you, if you haven't, you'll go, oh, yeah, that makes 100%.
Okay. Well, I cannot wait. I'm looking forward to it.
All right. Well, hey, if you enjoyed the conversation here today, rate, review, subscribe on Apple Podcasts. Give us those 5-star reviews. Of course, we're everywhere that you get your podcasts. And we appreciate you guys downloading this episode. Join in on the conversation that We Saw Something Scary on Facebook. Let us know if you've seen Bly Manor, what you think about it. So far, I've only seen positive stuff about Bly Manor on our Facebook group. So I'm hoping that these next 5 episodes turn the tide for you on this. And then, of course, if you want to help partner with us and make this podcast the best it can be, go to patreon.com/scarypodcast. And you can $3 or more will get you a bonus episode every month. And I think Jeff and I have landed on Antebellum. For this month, is that correct? All right. So I'll be watching Antebellum sometime over the next couple of weeks, and then we'll have that for you as soon as we possibly can. He's at Right Jeff, and I'm at Derek Zoo, and we are out of time, guys. Thanks so much for listening. We appreciate you coming back to us. Sorry that we were off last week, but we had birthday shenanigans and vacation shenanigans galore. So we appreciate your patience on this new episode. We'll be back next week with the conclusion of The Haunting of Bly Manor. But until then, stay away from clowns and sewers, white people teacups, and blind men with turkey basters. We'll see you guys back here next week. Bye-bye, man.